Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
For years, I just dreaded going to the dentist. But at Advanced Dentistry, I don't have to.
First and foremost, they want you to feel comfortable when you walk in. Like, you'll feel it. Whereas in the past, I might have gone into the dentist and thinking, I might feel some pain at some point. But with IV sedation, it can be something that you don't dread.
If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, you're not alone. Visit NoFearDentist.com to learn how IV sedation can change your life.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Three Questions. I'm your host, Andy Richter. Today, I get to talk to Edie Patterson. She's an actress, a writer, comedian, and she's a writer and performer on the show The Righteous Gemstones. And she is responsible for one of the greatest characters out there on television right now. And that's Judy Gemstone, who is really something, as we say. Between her collaborations with Danny McBride and her performances in films such as Knives Out, Edie is one of the best comedic performers working today. And I was lucky enough to have her in the studio with me because I get lonely. Here's my conversation with Edie Patterson. Enjoy.
I just love the sound of it. My voice, my beautiful voice. Oh, well, let's podcast.
Oh, let's do it.
I'm here talking today with a very funny. Now, you're one of those people that, like, we've never met, have we?
Mm-mm.
And you're like one of those people that I just feel like we don't have to fuck around with, like,
let's not fuck around.
Like, we're pals already.
I mean, honestly, that's kind of how I felt when they were like, oh, Andy wants you to come on his podcast. I was like, we don't know each other, but yeah, I'll go on my friend's podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's always, I mean, from having met a gazillion people and stuff, it's always a bummer when you're nodding because you know what I mean.
I think I do.
You know of somebody and you like their work or you've seen them on stuff and you're like, all right, there's my future friend. And then you meet them and they're just a fucking turd.
Yeah, it's a drag.
Oh, it's such a real drag when it's just like.
Yeah, because I'm sure you've learned to, like, kind of trust that hit too.
Yeah.
Of like, because you have had things go in your mind where you're like, oh yeah, that's my friend. A lot of times that works.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, I knew something.
Yeah.
I psychically kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, when they're a turd, it's just, it's deeply disappointing.
It's a really bummer. And like for me, because people, you know, for me all those years, and honestly, that's what Conan was. Like, and I mentioned this, you know, because I've told a million times, like him and me meeting, we got set up to meet each other. Which we would have known each other already.
Yeah.
We would have known each other eventually. Because
yeah,
we know
same
enough
world,
people.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, we know. And in fact, we figured out, and I mentioned this before, we were at like a house party at Bob Odenkirk.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this is, I don't know, like 92, 93, uh-huh. Something like that. And there's only 20 people there, but uh-huh. We just didn't like it. I don't know why this giant creature with red hair didn't register, but we didn't remember meeting each other.
Yeah.
But that's how the minute we met, it was like, oh, you're just as stupid as I am,
the
you know?
Greatest.
And it's just it's so good. And it's usually, you know, improv people you're pretty safe with. I find stand-ups, it's a little more dicier because they don't play well with others. They're not used to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's interesting. Because my whole background is improv, I don't always know how to, I don't always know how to find a stand-up.
Yeah.
And I'll think that gut thing of like, oh yeah, we can just fuck around and
yeah, yeah.
Maybe let's riff about something, or actually let's not try to be funny at all.
Right.
That's one thing a lot of improvisers are good at. They'll just be people when they're not performing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then, I don't know, sometimes I don't, I don't know how to compute, like when a stand-up starts doing some material or something, and I'm like, oh, I thought we were being people. I don't know how to be now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't have an act. I don't have an act. I have a voice I put on.
But then you'll meet one. You'll go, oh, I can get down with you.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, stand-ups are, I find too, and I do make. I mean, this distinction was put on me early on in Chicago. Improv stand-up. They were very separate. Mm-hmm. And I had friends that kind of bridged both, and I'd go to, like, this is a party of stand-ups. And it was was quieter. when I was in the sort of like transitioning from film school into doing improv,
yeah.
And I'd have parties and like it would be my film school, like, you know, black fingernail polish friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then my improv friends who are like all guys in Blackhawks jerseys. And my film school.
Converse.
Yeah. My film school friends would just be like, why do they have to be so loud? I was like, because it's kind of fun.
You're like, come on, we're all nerds.
Yeah. And it's kind of necessary, you know?
Yes.
Sometimes it's just plain necessary.
Yeah.
Well, you are. From the most originally named city in America, Texas City, Texas.
Yep. You know what's crazy is a friend of mine just this past weekend, I think, went to Lyle Lovett concert.
Yeah.
A friend of hers knew someone who knows him, or she's friends with something. They went, and my friend was backstage talking to him after. And he knew of the... of the show I'm on. I don't know what we can say and not. I'm not trying to promote anything. He knew of the...
You know, I've already kind of... Like, I was so good when the strike started where people would come in and I'd be like, you know, like, James Austin Johnson was on. And I was like, that late night sketch comedy show. And now I'm just kind of like, Righteous Gemstones.
Yeah, so he's into
Righteous
Gemstones.
Didn't say it.
Yes, yeah. I didn't say it. Anyway, my friend was saying, oh, yeah, Edie's from Texas. And he said, oh, I know. I watched the show. She's from Houston. And my friend, who knows better, said, no, actually, she's from Texas City. And he, being from Texas, went, yeah, but nobody knows what that is. So he just said the nearest metropolis.
Right, right, right.
Because really nobody knows what it is.
Because it's a coastal town, right?
Yeah, it's right there. It's like 15 minutes from Galveston. Right on the coast.
So you grew up like in a beach town, kind of. Because I always find them to be somewhat libertine, you know, or more so. Well, I mean, Texas is so weird anyway. Because
sure.
You can find
everything.
Yeah, and you can find pockets of really cool stuff, and then just know. Like
sure,
I said,
Austin.
Yeah, like I always said, Austin is like. Sitting next to a fun gay cousin at a Romney wedding, you know,
yes,
at like
that's
a big
so
Republican wedding, but you get like you just happen to get like the gay one sitting next to you, so
yeah, you're gonna
have a
best
good time.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's Texas City's not a beach town. Galveston is legitimately a beach town.
Uh-huh.
Texas City's a weirder thing because it's there are tiny bits of beach, but mostly the part that goes into the water is called the Texas City Dike, and it's this long strip of...
Jesus.
Hey, man, I say what I want.
I'm on strike.
It's this long, long strip of road with sort of kind of either rock beach next to both sides, but that juts out into the water.
Yeah.
And that's kind of...
That's
the version
where,
of the
yeah,
beach.
Yeah, that's your waterfront.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a different thing than like, let's take all our stuff and go to the beach.
Right.
You can do it there, but it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now something's happening that I've never seen in my life. I was just there this last week with my mom, and we went to Galveston to go eat with my aunt and uncle, and the water in Galveston was kind of a green blue.
Mm-hmm.
I have never in my life seen that in Galveston or Texas City. I have only seen literally the color of your coffee water.
Oh, brown.
Brown water.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's because it hasn't been raining and no dirt from the rivers is coming in.
But it's making it filthy.
Brown water.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. Yeah. The Gulf. Yeah, my ex-wife is from Louisiana. Oh. It was always similar. Yeah. Yeah, it's now. Why are you from like a long line of Texans? Why are your people in Texas City?
Yeah, my granddad, my mom's mom and dad are both from Texas, and then I think my granddad's mother was straight up from Germany.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, it's a long way back.
Yeah,
and not even just in the U.S. in Texas. And then my dad's parents, they actually grew up, both of them, in Chicago.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. Crazily. It's they so like weird when I think
Texas
about that.
They started in Texas and ended up in Chicago and then came
back?
No,
they came to Texas from Chicago.
Oh, from Chicago. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so I'll flash on that sometimes. They're both long since passed, but I'll think about being at my dad's parents' house, which was also in Texas City, and My grandma was obsessed with the Cubs.
Yeah, yeah.
And like thought Ryan Sandberg was the cutest. And, like
Ryan Sandberg is pretty cute.
But yeah, I'll forget that. Oh yeah, they were from a different place.
And did your dad grow up in Chicago then? Or?
No.
Oh, okay.
Mm, yeah.
So he's from
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
And then we grew up in the house that my mom grew up in. Her father built the house that we grew up in.
Wow.
That she then bought from her parents when she and my dad got married.
I grew up in the house that my great grandfather built.
Whoa.
Yeah. And we added on to it, but it was.
So who all lived there? Your great grandfather lived there.
My great grandfather built the house. Uh-huh. And I don't know if this is true, but they say that prior to this, that the land, prior to our family owning it, the land had belonged to the Black Hawk Indians.
Cool.
Well, not really. I mean, it's just another story of white men stealing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess,
land,
yeah, ultimately. You know, what are you pretty much do? Terrible.
What are you going to do?
I say cool because I go, maybe you experienced some magical shit there.
No, but, I can tell you that we had a huge box of arrowheads that we would find on our property.
Yeah, just in your
yard.
Which
always felt like so magical. Mm-hmm. Like, wow. You know, people for hundreds of years have been shooting at the same rabbits we do.
Yeah.
We do it with pellet guns.
Yeah.
It does feel like, it's weird because it does feel kind of like you're rooted there. But then I don't know how you were, but like I never once felt encumbered by the notion that I got to stay there.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know why. I mean,
I don't know why either.
My mom, you know, like my mom went away and came back.
Oh, wow.
Know? And when my grandpa, because then my grandpa had the house after his father passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he died, my grandmother moved down the street to a duplex and we moved into the house and mm-hmm. added a wing onto it and stuff. But my mom ended up coming back and she wasn't even that crazy about it. I just talked about this in an episode here where we were listening to John Cougar Mellencamp. I was born in a small town and I can breathe in this. And it was the lyric of, and every, you can be who you want to be in a small town. And my mom, I guess, was the first time hearing it, went, bullshit. Like, no, you cannot.
Right.
You cannot be whoever you want to be.
No,
in a
you cannot.
Town.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a false lyric.
Yes. Yes.
Mellencamp.
Yeah.
John Cougar.
Right, right. Well, yeah. And it's like, yeah, if you're John Cougar, you can be who you want to be, no matter where you are, because you're what's known as a rock star.
Yeah.
And they tend to get a lot of.
Right. Yeah. You were a white male rock star.
Yes.
In
yes.
a small town.
Yes.
How would it have been if you were gay, John?
I don't know.
How cool are small towns then, buddy?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
In your era.
Yeah. Well, were you aware like that you were bigger than Texas City? I know that's going to catch a lot of hell.
It wasn't even a thought like that. It wasn't like I'm bigger than Texas City. It was I'm different than this.
And did you feel that early on? I mean, because I know you were like, I saw or read an interview where you said something about you saw can't remember what the show was. You saw a show and you're like, wait, you can do this for a living?
Well, I saw a lot of things early on that were inspiring to me, but not until I did literally a talent show in seventh grade.
That's right.
And it was something we wrote together and then did together. And not until we were performing that and I was performing things I wrote and mm-hmm. seeing how this auditorium of
kids.
It was
kids like a dating game parody,
was a
right?
dating game yeah, parody. Yeah. Because we didn't have cable, and so we just had the regular channels.
The UHF channels.
And then we had three upper ones.
Yeah.
And on one of those upper ones, I think Channel 39, which was ours, they showed all kinds of amazing reruns.
Yep.
Yeah, Brady Bunch.
We had Channel 32 in Chicago mm-hmm. was the same thing.
The Monkees and like all this stuff. Green Acres, Petticoat Junction, all that crap. And Dating Game was one that I was obsessed with. I was also obsessed with wrestling at the same time.
Yeah.
And a lot of times Dating Game came on after wrestling. But yeah, so we wrote a Dating Game parody. And I mean, it was so generic, but it was like one girl was the jock and I was the nerd and literally had a pocket protector.
Sure.
And like glasses I would push up, you know, and like,
yeah.
But we wrote it and did it. And there was, man, something in my molecules changed when we were doing that and watching those kids like, you know, slap their knees and scream and go like, ooh. Oh, okay. This is what I have to figure out to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I had no idea how to figure out to do it.
But yeah.
Luckily, my parents were always like, yeah, sure. I'll be an
do
actor.
Do what you want. Yeah, yeah. I know.
We have no idea how to
I
help
know.
You.
Like, I sometimes my son has actually told me, like, and I find it hilarious. He's like, you should have pushed me more. He's 22 now.
Oh, my God.
And I've always told him, I said, you need a different dad then, because that is not what I'm going to do.
You should have pushed me more.
Yeah, he's like, you should have, like, because my thing was, do whatever you want, you know? And I think because, like, the fact that there's, you know, he's like, he's not sure what that is. But it's like, well, A, you're 22.
Yeah,
no one knows what the fuck they want to do really when they're 22.
No way.
Even if you have, like, I want to perform. You don't know exactly.
You don't know how it's going to shake down.
Yeah, if you're going to be able to.
And also, yeah, me knowing what I wanted to do at 22 is a whole other thing than someone at 22 now knowing what they want to do.
Yeah,
All I can think of as you say he's 22 is like, oh, man, he had a weird chunk of years.
He sure did.
Right at the end of being a teenager.
He sure did.
I'm like, that does something.
He came back from his freshman year of college on spring break and never went back.
Yeah.
Stayed back at home with his newly divorced mother. And, you know, it was rough. It was really, really tough.
And that takes a minute to, like, figure out.
And also the thing that, like, you don't think, like, that it's easy to read stories about, but it's like, people his age, that like, it's not you're going to make more money than your parents.
Right.
It's not that. Mm-mm. Like, that's not what the world is telling him. You know what? You're probably going to have to get a shitty job mm-hmm. and then do kind of what you like to do on the side, because that's just the reality of what it is.
Right.
And that was like kind of in our minds too, but we could believe that we can do this. Mm-hmm. Like there's enough of this going on that there's a living. And now, even if you're a kid that wants to do this, there, you know, you're looking at the way it is now. It's like nobody knows if there's jobs out there. If there's, you know, if you can make a living doing this.
Or like I always feel like they've been sold this weird thing because of I don't know, even just because of TikTok and stuff. They've been sold this weird thing that's almost that thing you're saying, but also the opposite of like, come on, anyone can do it. So if you're not doing it by the time you're 18, you're a fuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, whoa.
Right. I'm making 200 grand just by wearing this jewelry.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
And filming it on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find when I talk to, crazily, yesterday on an airplane, I was talking to this kid that was 14 who sat by my mom and I. And it seems like he was a musical prodigy. He was flying for the first time by himself. And I noticed he had like a band shirt on. And so I was asking him what he played. Kind of quickly figured out, oh, he plays everything. He's picked the tuba because that's his favorite. But I mean, he was speaking with such wild intelligence on everything musical that I was like, okay, I see what's happening here. But he even said, I was like, wow, that's really cool, dude, that you found something that makes you really happy and it works for you. Like, you're in the flow with it. Like, that's awesome. That's really exciting. He was like, well, you know, I do wish that I'd found it younger. I'm like, oh my God, wow. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, kids also put these weird, like, old school milestones now like, I'm like, God, has no one taught them, like, milestones are bullshit?
Yeah. Or the fact that, like, some, you know, other children were, like, put into, like, musical servitude at an early age.
Yeah.
You will practice piano 4 hours a day.
Totally.
At six.
Yeah. Go walk the balance beam.
Yeah. It's like, that's not, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm at the point where, like, I don't know what the proper thing to do with a human is, to like get them to find self-motivation and to, you know, because, and again, it's like the other thing with the young people, the planet, like my a few years ago, one of my kids said to me something about, like, well, I mean, who knows if, you know, we'll even be able, the beach will even be there, you know, like if it won't just be, and like, that's in their head too. That's just like,
and they're not wrong.
Yeah, they're not wrong. Like, well, you know, they're, you know, the coastline might be 10 miles in 20 years. You know, like, nope, Miami might be gone. Key West, bye. You know? Oh well.
I don't know. I don't know how they. I don't know how they're supposed to figure anything out.
I don't know either.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can't you tell my love's a crow?
Now, because you were kind of raised in a religious family, and now you have one of the most famously filthy mouths on television. I mean, were those two things, like, were you the family that people could, you know, like in your family, like there was fart jokes and dirty stuff and, you know, and like kind of reveling and.
For sure.
If somebody had a big zit, everybody had to look at it, kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. This is crazy. I haven't thought about this in so long. I'm not kidding. At one point, my dad had not a zit, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe a boil.
Or a cyst.
Like a small boil or cyst on his back.
Yeah.
But I'm not kidding you. My sister and I used to like sit on the bed as my mom would work on it and pop it. And we would all scream.
Yeah. In delight.
Like, yeah, it was like a thing we looked forward to.
Yeah.
But yeah, we definitely, my dad was a plumber and it wasn't like he didn't pull punches with trying to make sure there was no cursing in the house.
Right.
He had a pretty kind of absurd sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which I think I kind of got parts of from him and then parts from my own. And then my mom is also really funny, but in a whole other way that's, I don't know, more goofy or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was never like, oh, we can't act that way at the Pattersons.
Yeah, it was for sure
like a safe space to be a real fucking weirdo.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like, I, you know, it did kind of like there was no, like, I don't even know why our bathrooms had doors in our house.
You know, no boundaries. Just,
there was no boundaries. There was like, you know, mom, I'm going to the mall. I need money. Bring me my purse. And my mom's on the toilet. Like, here, she like gets money.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know,
nope, no for big deal. Yeah.
We always closed the bathroom door, but that in no way, shape, or form
stopped anyone.
Guaranteed that no one was going to open it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Still to this day, every time I go to pee, my mom starts asking for me. And it's established now she will not answer the, well, she will not open the door. We don't do that to each other.
Right, right.
But that was fully how it was.
But she will stand at the door and talk to you the entire time.
She used to. And now I'll just go like, mom, I'll literally be out in 20 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, I mean, that's, you know, being, I think that one of the beginnings of being funny is like being okay with like what a strange, like liquid filled bag the human body is, and how, and how to like, to, and how to be fancy, you know, if you're going to be fancy about that, it's always like, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There were, there was quite a bit of, growing up, farting in my house and like jokes about farting.
Yeah.
Which I think made me become like, right now you couldn't pay me to fart in front of my husband.
Oh, really?
Or him, me. But if it happens, we laugh a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think maybe that helped me decide like, oh, this is not a thing that's great in a relationship.
Yeah.
But I think for some people it does work.
Yeah. No, it definitely, I mean, it depends on the person, because I now am in a, I recently got remarried, and it's really, I mean, my wife is like a mixed bag. We have a 3-year-old.
Okay.
And so there's all that baby stuff.
Uh-huh.
And there's, you know, and I mean, my daughter's, you know, I pick her up at school and she wants to ride on my shoulders. And the second I put her on my shoulders, I feel the fart on the back of my neck. Like, thanks, hon. You couldn't have gotten rid of that before you got up on my back.
Just warm.
Yeah,
neck.
Just like, oh, okay.
All her right. Body pushing away a little.
Yeah. So there, you know, there's all that. But like, but it is, like, there's no, like, I remember when we started dating and I was, and I, you know, she's like, there's pee in the toilet. And I said, yeah, I got up in the middle of the night and I peed. And why am I going to flush the toilet?
Yeah, wake everyone up.
And wake like, everyone up and waste the water and whatever. And she's like, I don't want to look at your pee. I'm like, it's pee, you know? But
yes.
I'm like, all right. So now, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, I'll flush the toilet. I'll waste precious water.
That one I'm okay with. I did wake up this morning to some pee in the toilet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't know whose it was?
I'm not sure whose it
was. Mystery
that one I'm fine with.
Well, so you know you're funny, but you know you got to get out of Texas City. And then you went to college Texas?
Yeah, I went to college in Texas at a place called Texas State, just a state school where you could major in theater.
Yeah.
With like a BFA.
Where's Texas
in acting. San Marcos, which is like half an hour from Austin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Really beautiful little town.
And, yeah.
But it's the place where I got the most like scholarships. And
right.
We had, my mom and I, that whole year leading up to college, we would stay up and she would find me like, hey, if you write an essay for this running club in Lamarck, which was, you know, two towns over.
Yeah, yeah.
And they pick it, then you get $600 for a scholarship. Or, you know, I mean, we did all
I
of
did,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had the same thing.
And then I got one from the school and kind of all cobbled together. It equaled something.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there wasn't a way that I was going to like be able to go somewhere. I also, one thing, being from Texas City, I didn't know where I should go that would help me be a professional actor.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were places. I knew there was Juilliard. And my dad took me. It was the first time I had ever been on an airplane. My dad took me to audition for Juilliard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I begged them.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're having an audition in Chicago. Can you take me? And he did that. They were so awesome. They didn't know how to help me do it. But if I asked for something like that, we figured it out.
Yeah.
I did not get into Juilliard. It was an incredibly traumatic experience.
Was it bad?
Oh, dude. Brutal.
I swear those, you know, those snootatoriums don't do anything anyway, you know?
So I knew there was that, but I didn't know there were these other schools you could go to where you like even meet other people that can help you, or there's famous alum, or
right,
you know.
Right, right.
So anyway, I think
the internet too is like not having. Was the internet like
it was like just
starting,
coming around?
Yeah, yeah. So you didn't know, like, because it was the same thing when I went to film school. It's like, well, I've heard NYU and I know LA schools, but I can't do that, so I'm going to stay in Chicago and do this.
Yeah, totally. And by the time I was in at Texas State for 2 years. There was something I'd heard about where you could go and audition for a bunch of schools at once. And by then I had decided, like, what am I doing? I need to be in some conservatory. Yeah, by then I knew there was a thing called a conservatory.
Sure. I'd learned that word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I had done this audition. Anyway, I got accepted into like the Stella Adler School at NYU or something.
Uh-huh.
But they were going to give me a little financial aid, but not enough. And I can remember talking to my mom and going, this is what I have to do. What am I doing here? Taking these classes, fucking math and philosophy, and I need to be acting all day. And she was like, well, I don't know what to tell you, but if you want to go there, you're going to have to call and get them to give you more money. So I would literally call them every day and go, look, I know you said you'd give me this much, but I need you to pay the whole thing. And they would literally day after day go, I mean, it's not happening.
Yeah. That's not how it works.
So anyway, I didn't go, and I did my 4 years there. And I'm so glad I did. I still am a big believer that, I don't know, the only reason that college is anything is because you get to go live in a city of children and become an adult and know how to make friends. Yeah. And yeah.
Learn how much to drink and not to drink.
All
and
of
learn,
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how much you can drink and still drive. Sorry. It's just the reality, folks. it's all this. It's learning how to be a grown-up. And,
totally.
And I always felt like right when I was getting out of college, I was like, I actually kind of feel ready to learn something, you know, like
right when it's done.
When it's like, oh yeah, this sounds. I mean, my sister just took her first kid to college, the first of her kids that going to college, and she's like, I just felt this envy, like just like I want to start this, like I want like, and college is so cool now, like mm-hmm. she's like the cafeteria was so good, we had garbage, you know,
well, we had garbage too, and yeah. Most of my like theater friends, I don't know. I don't understand what they would eat, but for whatever reason, they didn't eat a lot in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And they would go and just get a whatever, like a bar or something, but they would eat at
yogurt,
the restaurants around town. Or but I ate there at least a couple meals a day.
Yeah.
And the one and only panic attack I've had in my life was in college. Freaked out sitting in a class, and I was like running, running back to my dorm. I'm like, I don't know what this is. I can't breathe. I went and sat in a church on campus. I was like, please, God, whatever this is, I don't. So later, I think maybe even I went to a doctor. I was like, I don't know what happened. My heart was racing and blah, blah, blah. So he's asking me about my diet, and I went, yep. So for at least a year now, every meal, I drink Mountain Dew from the cafeteria at the college.
And that's the worst.
The worst. No water ever.
No water and all caffeine.
All caffeine.
Yeah.
All caffeine. In like those big red plastic cups.
Yeah, sure.
And I just
fill
it with ice in my Mountain Dew and go learn my monologues.
Oh, that's hilarious. You have Mountain Dew poisoning.
Yeah, seriously.
You have done the dew too much. Oh, man, that's hilarious. So then you go to Austin, because that's like, you know, the nearest place to
totally
perform. Yeah.
Well, and I had started the very first improv show I did for an audience was sort of toward the end of college.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I went to Austin and was just working to make money. But my main thing was that's where I really started improvising. And
yeah.
Paid audiences would come. And I did a couple of independent films there that, you know, don't pay anything. And I sort of went, oh, right, you have to move somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I had two friends who had moved to LA. And yeah, I literally still didn't know, like, do you go to LA? Do you go to New York?
Yeah.
I remember at that point, I had started noticing that a lot of TV shows were filmed in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
And there was a certain point where I thought, is that where you're supposed to go?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I realized, oh, you can't go there.
It's a different country.
Yeah, it's a different country.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I went to where I had a couple of friends.
And it was and here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then started doing stuff with the Groundlings. And
yeah.
But yeah, it was partly just as simple as that, as I knew more TV and film happened in LA.
Yeah.
Than maybe New York.
Yeah.
And I knew I had two friends and I could figure out living with them.
Yeah. Did you find like that there was a like qualitative difference in terms of like your friends and your people that you're hanging out with in Texas, and then you come to LA and it's like, oh, this is even more my tribe?
Yeah, I think so. I have a few friends that have stayed
mm-hmm.
since college and are still some of my besties for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think once you start sort of honing in and knowing like, oh, I'm for sure going to be an actor and I'm for sure an actor who improvises and I'm never going to stop improvising. Because then, yeah, you're meeting improvisers and stuff. And then you get your world within the world in LA, I feel like for me at least was a huge key to going, oh, it can be the best city in the world here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, this place can be great.
Yeah, but I think before you've got your thing inside the thing, it can be sort of like, oh, God. Especially from Texas.
You
can be sort of like, what's happening? But
for me, it was always like the really handsome, you know, mid-50s guy, like at the driving range on a Wednesday at 11 a.m.,
uh-huh.
you know, just being like, I bet that fucking guy came out here because he was handsome.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to be an actor. And look at him here.
Like, I didn't know where this was going.
No. It's just like, just that guy, you know, that just where it just felt like, oh, there's so many people here that came out here to get in, you know, and now it's like, and now they, I don't know, you know, sell Venetian blinds or something, you know, and it's like I was always afraid of like, this is not the place. I mean, it's an easier place to not have a gig than New York, for sure. Mm-hmm. New York's a lot like the meanest if you don't have a gig. You can be comfortable here, you mm-hmm. know, but it is. But it's still, there's this, as Mark Maron once said on the Conan show, he said, about why he didn't like LA. He goes, like, you look out and you see that stuff in the sky. That's not smog. That's vaporized disappointment.
Ah.
I was like, oh, that's really fucking true.
Yeah, there can be like an existential thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Until you get your sort of make your own universe.
Right, here. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe the sprawl has something to do with that.
Yeah. Well, and I think also too, just like the draw of show business attracts so many people that just don't really understand what it means.
Yes.
To be creative and make television or make movies, they just kind of see this whole thing and they want a part of it. And they, you know,
right.
And then they approach me at a Starbucks and, you know, pepper me with 15 names that I'm supposed like this carpet bombing of references. Like,
I'm sure you get blasted.
Hey, my name's Bob Grant. And I, you know, and you sure I've talked to, you know, Stacy Miller over at, you know, just like, and I'm like, who are all these people? You know, these people. And anyway, I got a project. I want you to like, wow. You know,
are you
getting people at as you get noticed, like strangers saying, hey, I have something you should.
It's more, knock on wood, it's more that it's in a really, usually really nice phase of the people who want to talk to me like something I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you get blasted that way because of your talk show background, where they go, oh, I know this guy and he can help me.
Yeah, and he's on a thing where they promote stuff all the time. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knows everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's talked to everybody and he's friends with everyone who's ever been on there. And
like a guy tries to give me his novel. What the fuck am I going to do with your novel?
Yeah.
Like, if I had a novel, I wouldn't know where to take it, you know?
Yeah.
Just the desperation to be a part of this thing, which is ultimately the closer you get to, like, the fame part of it, it's like, oh, that's kind of, you know, that's a creature that you feast on each other. You and fame.
Well, you want to tell that guy, too, like, oh, dude, do you really want to do this?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, are you giving me this just because think this is your idea of what this could be?
Yeah.
Or do you really like watching? Do you really like writing movies?
Yeah, yeah.
And you want to be in that world and like, yeah, because it can get real creepy if anyone's approaching you because their mindset is, oh, he's so lucky. What he does is so fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh, no. I've been working at this really hard.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I kind of...
It all landed in your lap.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee,
yeah,
ooh-wee.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Did, when you were coming up doing improv,
mm-hmm.
was... Because I have noticed just in the times, you know, from when I started, most improv teams had one woman, mm-hmm. maybe two. And were you starting to see more women coming up in comedy? Because I mean, there's just a lot more women in comedy, and I think I really enjoy it because mm-hmm. I've said this before. It's not because I'm such a great ally. It's because I'm tired of men. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like a male point of view of comedy to me is like, yeah, it's going to be hard to show me something I haven't seen before.
Got it.
Whereas with women, there's, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, there's, I mean, what did we, you know, Toadie Fields and, you know, Phyllis Diller and, you know, Joan Rivers. And then it's like, and now all of a sudden there's, you know, hundreds of funny women, you know.
I feel like it's interesting. I'm really, really grateful for this. And I don't know if this is something that just was a huge luck thing or if I was like calling this to myself energetically, I'm not sure, but I feel like every step has, I've had amazing chicks in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like part of the reason I ever even wanted to go through the whole deal at Groundlings was because I was very inspired by the women I saw there.
Yeah.
And I was also improvising with what's now a group called Impro Theater. Right now we do full-length improvised plays, but before it was more short-form, mm-hmm. sort of standard. For a while it was called Theater Sports. It existed in L.A. well before I ever moved here. But even as part of that and Impro Theater, there were always these women in the mix, many of them like even 10 years older than me,
mm-hmm.
that I thought were genuine badasses.
Yeah.
So I kind of always lucked into whenever I wanted to be the best or the most awesome or, you know, get better at improv, I always had women to look up to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, cool. I want to be that good one day, or I want to be that easy, or I want to be that wild on stage, or that fearless.
And
it was usually women, crazily.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think back and I'm like, okay, yeah, definitely in Texas, there were less women than men. I don't think that's the case in Austin now. I think I don't know though. There's a lot of women in the mix. I know a lot of great women in the mix. And now for sure in LA, there's a lot of women in the mix. I don't know that it's totally equal yet.
Yeah. Nor should it be.
And I know I really, really like doing all women shows.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting though, because I think about this. not too long ago, just even like a month ago at the Groundlings. I did an improv show, and just the way it was set up, it was all women and one guy.
Mm.
Which to me, I think, yeah, I've been part of all women groups a lot in my life. But I think to a lot of audience members, and I think to a lot of students who are coming to the show, that was a big deal. And I do try to remember that. Like, we do need to hammer this in, even though it feels like a given to me. Like, of fucking course we need a ton of women in every show. It is important to, like, keep hammering it and just make it. I just think it should be a given.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because definitely left untended, it'll just slide back into.
Yeah, totally.
I always worry about that. I remember somebody was talking. I think it was like when James Corden announced that he was leaving, mm-hmm. and there are all these people. Which, I mean, late night now is just a wasteland. I mean, you know, the Tonight Show mm-hmm. gets ratings that would have been not great for us at when we were on at 12:30, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many less eyes on television when it's being rated, when the ratings are coming in. But I forgot what the fuck.
Maybe the fact, I think where you were going was, even when they're looking at openings that come up in late night, it's so rare that you hear a woman mentioned.
Oh, right. It was the James Corden. Yeah, and people were like saying, you know, give Ali Wong that job, or mm-hmm. give another person of color mm-hmm. that job. And I was just thinking, if Ali Wong gets that job, she's going into salted earth, late night television now. It's just, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine starting a late night talk show now. And how much the deck is stacked against you in terms of getting attention, doing something different, doing a quality, you know, mm-hmm. a good quality show that people are going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, if they give that to somebody like Ali Wong, it won't do well. And then it'll give the gatekeepers a reason to say, we tried with an Asian woman, and look what happened, you know.
God, because I hear you say that.
We pushed her out on an ice floe into the Arctic, and she froze, you know, like.
Yeah, I don't even realize what a wasteland it is that you're saying. But I hear you say, like, oh, maybe someone was throwing out Ali Wong's name, and I go, God, that would be the fucking greatest.
Oh, fantastic.
And my possibly naive brain goes, maybe that would change everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you see like Wanda Sykes guest host something and you go, holy shit.
Yeah.
Why isn't this a thing the time?
Well, like Sarah Silverman had a fantastic talk show behind a paywall, which people aren't, for some reason, they're not ready to do that yet. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't, mm-hmm. it didn't take, you know, and it's, I just don't, I mean, we don't know what the next kind of version of that is yet. And like I said to people when they're like, who do you think is going to be the next talk show host? I was like, nobody knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not just going to pick somebody that's a known quantity and put them in that thing. It's going to be somebody completely new who starts a different kind of show than an old person like me will go like, what the hell is that?
Uh-huh.
You know? Like, you know, like the way, I mean, I know, you know, there was some, like there's, as somebody once told me, like these kids brought up on Tim and Eric,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it's like, they like absurd shit. Like sometimes it's not even funny. There's no joke. And it's like, yeah, that is kind of what the kids want. You know, they like non-jokes sometimes and just.
Yeah, totally. The teenagers I know, like that is the stuff they love.
Yeah.
They love, they love I Think You Should Leave, and they
I mean, which, like, is hilarious and fantastic, mm-hmm. but it is like, but like
it makes me laugh till I'm crying.
I tried to show some of I Think You Should Leave to my mom, and she was just like, what? I don't understand. What is happening, you know?
See, I kind of love watching it with anyone who's like that, because it takes me further into space.
Yeah, yeah.
And makes me laugh even harder. Because there is something, God, we share an agent. I don't know Tim really. I've met him before. But,
yeah, I've met him a couple of times.
But I've told his agent before, like, God, I really love his show. And it's, I don't know how he's doing this, but you feel altered when you're watching it.
Yeah.
You feel like, what did someone put in my coffee? Like, you feel off. And I think it's, I don't know what he's doing, but I think that's magic.
Well, and I'm always amazed because it's kind of very similar themes. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, not so sharp guy putting into embarrassing situation in front, high stakes embarrassing situation in front of lots of people.
Yep.
Or not so bright guy acts terribly in high pressure situation, but doesn't understand. You know, like, there's and I'm just amazed that, like, I will watch variations on that theme done by Tim.
Yeah.
For 25 years, I will just sit and watch it over and over. And I even love that sometimes there's like Tim, there must be like the thought of like, look, Tim, you've been the moron at the center of the sketch, like five sketches. We need to, let's just, you can be one of the people going, I don't think you should do that. And we'll just have like some nice old man be the asshole who's just basically doing the Tim Robinson stuff.
Totally.
And I fucking love it every time, you know?
Yeah, it is some random old dude with a shirt, brother. I'm realizing as you say that, that it is that every time. And I'm like, oh, I love watching things that make me cringe.
Yeah.
My husband can't handle it. Yeah. He has to walk out of the room.
I have a level where the cringe is like reality show stuff, like where somebody, like prank kind of stuff. I just am like, no.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to be.
If I know it's fake, then it's like, okay, I can handle it. Yeah.
Well, I can even handle real stuff as long as I feel like no one is being hurt and no one, and the performer isn't being mean to anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
If I feel like they're like, confusing an old person, I can't. It just makes me mad.
Or when the comedy is like, this idiot doesn't know he's in a comedy sketch.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, no shit, because he just came to CVS to buy some cough syrup, you know?
Yeah. But I don't know, anything where people are on awkward dates or living in a house together, drinking too much and fucking, I'm all in. And yeah, my husband has to walk out of the room and I'm like, oh, that's part of what I love about what he's doing on that show is he's making those parts of my brain fire.
Yeah.
But it's all written.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. To me, that's the magic.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't know how you're making me like squirm and tears roll down my face laughing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Making my cat happy is my number one priority, and Fresh Step Outstretch litter helps me do just that. Meet Mr. Mittens. Mitty, for short. Mitty is happiest when his litter box is clean and fresh, and Fresh Step Outstretch is amazing at absorbing waste and odor. We sure have found our common ground, haven't we? Happy cat, happy life. Find Fresh Step Outstretch at a store near you. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company. Certain trademarks used under license from the Procter & Gamble Company or its affiliates.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a crow?
I want to talk about the show that you're on. I just have to talk about it because it's such a funny show.
Thanks, and, dude.
And, you know, when it first came on, because I, you know, the televangelist is a comedic trope.
Sure.
And so I was like kind of skeptical. And even though as much as I love Danny and kind of you know, the Danny McBride universe. Mm-hmm. Just talk about another guy that just, he's got his own world that he's made. Yeah,
absolutely.
That he inhabits, you know, mm-hmm. fully as kind of Danny McBride, mm-hmm. you know, and I love it, but I was kind of like, oh, televangelists, you know, and then when I watched the show, what I love is there is not an ounce of cynicism about the religious aspect of mm-mm. it. There's
zero.
Never any, and I thought, oh, that's so brilliant that there's never, we're fleecing these rubes. Mm-mm. It's like, this is our job. This is our thing. We put on a show. We do this stuff. And they believe it, you know,
totally.
Which is the complete key to then, because if you believe that part of it, mm-hmm. it's like, then everyone can be absolutely bananas.
Totally.
You know, because
everyone just needs
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like part of what makes it really fun is we have never been making fun of believers or belief or religion. It's just, let's deep dive these screwed up people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These specific screwed up people.
Right.
But yeah, I think it maybe helps that we all kind of grew up with religion in the mix.
Yeah.
And none of us had any desire to do something super parodied or blasphemous or yeah it's
or
it's,
like was going to tear down televangelists.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it kind of.
It maybe kind of does.
It kind of does that, but it does that in a way that isn't preachy,
mm-mm.
which is always the best way to. If you wrap a message in a story, like I've always felt that way. Like if you can give the audience what they want and also have them learn whatever you want them to learn,
mm-hmm.
like that's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
And if you put what you want them to learn up front, I just know me as an audience, I'm like, no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, like you want me to learn something?
It.
Fuck you.
Forget it.
I'll go watch something where I learn nothing.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I'm not trying to do homework.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, but I do think that then it is like, it certainly is warts and all kind of people. And so I think that it does then, when you do look at, you know, a real televangelist,
mm-hmm.
you can be like, it does undercut them in a way.
Sure.
Where you can be like,
I think it shows the hypocrisy that can exist.
Yes. Yes.
In that world.
And the tremendous amount of wealth.
Huge.
The tremendous amount of wealth that goes kind of unaddressed.
Mm-hmm.
It never gets
untaxed.
Really sort of worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And yeah, it's just interesting if the approach is these people are doing their best.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, I just think it makes everything more fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do think that they think they're chosen.
Yeah.
I don't think they think like, ooh, look what we're pulling off.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they think like, yeah, obviously we're chosen.
Yeah, yeah. And I love, too, that it started in professional wrestling. That, like,
yeah.
that John Goodman's character.
Yeah, was showman.
Was in professional mm-hmm. wrestling. It's just like, oh, I know of a similar business,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
a similar brand of live show business that I could be in. Yeah, it's great. And, you know, and I think one thing, too, and one of the reasons I think that your character gets to stand out so much and really pops so hilariously is because you get to write your own stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we all kind of have our hands on everything when we're writing. And so it's not like, oh, I write all the Judy stuff.
Right.
But definitely I've got my hands on most of it.
I think that makes, but I think that's, there's something intangible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you get to say your
it's
own.
It's so lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Huge, huge. That's a huge gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking at some clips I was telling Sean before that the great monologue at the end of season one where you you're Edie and he's Tim. The character names I always, you know, but whatever. But you meet at Outback Steakhouse and you tell him the story of your professor
mm-hmm.
and your romantic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But just lightning bolt to my slit, Just that phrase, I was like, no, you can't, like, nobody would write that for somebody to say. Nobody would have the, I mean, because that was, I'm assuming that you came up with lightning bolt to my
Absolutely.
Sled.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Because I don't think anybody could, like, write that for somebody else. Like, that's something you've got to say for yourself.
And luckily, that's my favorite thing, is to make things really specific.
It's the best.
And how a specific weirdo would talk.
Yeah.
And luckily, that stuff that if I'm writing something that really makes me laugh, 9 times out of 10, it really makes Danny laugh too.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another great part in the mix, is that if I write lightning bolt to my slit, there's not someone in the mix who's going, no, what does that even mean?
Yeah. Ew. Whereas everyone knows exactly what that means.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, it's such a wonderful show. And I am like,
thanks, Andy.
I'm envious of you guys. Like, it just, you know, even like you guys is, and I've seen them before too, like you guys is bullshit. Here we are in the set, you know, promoting the next season of, you guys' things of those are actually funny and fun, and obviously you're all having a good time. And that's like the eat your vegetables of being on a TV show. And usually it's so boring and no one gives a shit. And it's like, they're funny, you know? Like,
that's great. Thanks.
You guys are having fun. And it's
for sure
the main thing, you know?
Yeah. We're genuinely having a blast. And I think we all feel really, really grateful for that.
Yeah.
And like, oh, dude, it doesn't always work out this way.
No, it sure doesn't.
Yeah.
And it, like, sure doesn't.
I think
yeah.
we're truly savoring it, which makes me really happy.
I read something where there's a movie there's a Edie Patterson movie that Danny kind of shepherded through.
Yeah, that we wrote.
And is it coming out? Has it been out or?
No, we haven't made it yet.
Oh.
We'll make it at some point.
You should do that.
Yeah.
You really should.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. I mean, if you get
He'll
time.
Direct it. Honestly, dude, it's awesome. And I hope we get to make it at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels to me, I think what we set out to write was something in the vein of like almost those, almost kind of dramedy comedies from the 70s, or like a character comedy from the 70s. Where it's just like a little deep dive on a person or on a little group of people. I think it will be a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds,
just have to figure out when.
Where was it before the strike happened? Like, was it seemed to be on its way to being made, or?
We had pushed it for a minute. There was a minute, like a few years ago. I never know what the number of years is with COVID anymore.
I know. It's,
there was some point before COVID.
Yeah.
Because we wrote it a while ago. There was a point before COVID where there were some people interested, but it maybe wasn't exactly the budget that we thought we could make the very best thing with.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we, had something in the mix with someone else. But the schedule also for our show gets so intense,
because
we write it all and then we film it all, and it's so big,
back to back without any real lag in between.
I mean, there's enough time in between to get production going,
right,
but yeah, it's pretty back to back, the finishing writing and the starting.
Yeah, that's what filming. I mean, like, you start episode one, but by the time you finish episode, what are they doing in tens or 12?
We actually usually have we do 9 of them. We usually have about 8 written by the time we start filming. And we block shoot, so
yeah,
it's kind of,
which means, for if you don't know, you shoot stuff for different episodes based on the location or the whatever. If you got like a complicated wardrobe, shoot all those scenes even though it's across 3 episodes.
Yeah Or like the big amphitheater, what do you call that? Coliseum that we use for our church is a real working concert venue.
And you got to do it
ice
all
capades
at once.
Venue.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it?
So we need to shove all that into a couple weeks and stuff like that.
Sweet.
But yeah, it's pretty back to back. We write, then we film.
And are you going back any? Well, I mean, obviously you don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, we did get picked up for a fourth season, which is awesome.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. We just don't know when we'll be able to start writing.
And are those written? Oh, you haven't even started writing them?
Cause, no.
Because they haven't paid for it yet.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to pay for it.
So we haven't even started.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're right around the time where we probably would.
Yeah.
Start. So hopefully it won't push it all that much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you see for yourself going, you know, heading down? And I don't just necessarily mean work things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, anything going on, you know, you want to open a pancake restaurant, you know, I don't know, buy a boat, any stuff like that. Big plans.
No boat, no pancake restaurant, but
missing out.
Yeah, which one do you have?
I'm combining the two.
Oh, I may be interested. I really, really like acting. I love it. And I feel like I'm in a good phase mentally and soul-wise where I think it took me a while to realize, oh, the best thing I have to offer is if I'm completely myself and exactly what I think is funny or true or insert any number of words here.
Yeah.
And not trying to be an idea of anyone else. Not that I was ever trying to be anyone else, but I think the discomfort of comparison is more more intense as you're starting out.
Yeah,
and I think I just started
trying to figure out what people want you to be.
Right,
you know, that's the other thing.
Right, and I think I've realized, oh, that even that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that the only time I feel like I can get to another level when I'm doing it is when I'm at a true place in my head of there's any number of phrases, but letting it rip, or a true place of fuck it. And that's a totally positive thing in my head.
Yeah, me too.
I
always say, don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Then that, and
let's
I
see
mean
what happens.
A positive thing. Yeah. Like,
and then things can get transcendent.
Yeah.
And I feel like only in the past chunk of years have I really, truly felt that. So I want to keep going forward with that in my performance and just do awesome things. Yeah. I really like the stuff I've been doing and I want to keep doing awesome things that I know I can bring something awesome to, and things that I read or write and I go, ooh, I know I can feel the sweet spot of this inside of me.
Yeah.
And this is going to be different and weird, and it's going to be different and weird because I'm doing, because it's me. Yeah. So I definitely want to keep doing awesome things acting wise. I don't know if that's like kind of a boring answer or not.
No, it's
but,
not a boring answer
but
at
I also
all.
Want to keep writing, and I want to, there's a few movies I want to write, and I don't know when, but I do want to direct. I directed a music video last year.
Nice.
I was like, oh yeah, I really dig this.
That's fun.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not sure when. I'm not on a rush for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do want to do that at some point.
Yeah. I've done some commercials, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't sound like directing commercials doesn't sound, but it's like I've figured out I like being on set. Mm-hmm. That's just what I, you know, like I don't need a lot of things that I thought I probably should have, you know, number one on the call sheet or, you know, ownership of things and all these different, like, I just like to be on set.
Yeah, creative.
Yeah, on set on something, on a good show that I can believe in and that I like the people with, and that's...
It's everything.
Yeah, it's everything.
Yeah.
And I mean, because it's like, you have so little control over the end product anyway, and I've been in so many things, well, I didn't say so many things, but I mean, I've been in a number of things where I'm like, man, this is going to be great. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh my God, this was not great at all. When I go see it, it's like, I don't know what happened, but in between then and now, it's not as good as I thought it would be.
Uh-huh.
And then other times, you know, and then if, I mean, they're less where you're like, oh, this thing is not good. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, okay, it was a little better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But you have so little control over that, that it's like, I don't know, you know.
Here's my thing with even directing that music video.
Yeah.
When I got asked to do it, I was like, ooh, I just need you to know this. And I vomited out, like, I don't know lenses. I don't know how to this stuff. I don't know these technical things. And on this, at least, because it was an amazing DP, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But you went to film school, so you know all that stuff.
I don't know that much of that stuff.
Really?
Honestly, no, I don't. I mean, and I helped produce a late night television show for years and years and years and years. So my expertise is in, here's three pages of a sketch, mm-hmm. get it on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, and I'll say, I mean, I don't know the exact, you know, the people that light things because mm-hmm. they know how to light things.
Yeah.
The people that shoot things know how to shoot things. Uh-huh. Whereas, like, I feel like, but in order for the thing to have a sense of humor, that's what you got to know. And that is the thing that I've done, you know, the whole Malcolm Gladwell zillion hours.
Yep.
I have done that a zillion hours, make little short things. When it gets to be longer form, like the notion of directing a movie, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I would accept that
mm-hmm.
because I would just feel like it'd be like the same thing as like, will you draw up some blueprints for this new house? I'd be like, I don't know how to do that. I mean, I'll arrange your furniture, but I don't know how to build your house.
Yeah.
So no, I think there's always, we're led to believe like every director's got to be an auteur. Not really. You mm-hmm. just got to kind of be like
have a point of view.
Well, and keep the morale up.
Uh-huh.
You just got to keep things moving and keep everybody happy
mm-hmm.
and make it set a good tone, you mm-hmm. know? And it's lots of problem solving. You know, you got people asking you questions and stuff, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It's, you know, yeah.
Yeah. It was that, well, that's the stuff I focused on when I did it.
Yeah.
Because I had also written the concept
treatment.
For the
video.
Yeah. And so I knew there were times I wanted her to be able to be hilarious, and there were times I wanted her to be able to be just kind of gorgeous and like then like sexy but a funny version of it. And I do feel like I pulled all that off.
Who is the artist?
This awesome chick, dude, named Elle King. She's
okay.
A country star now. She used to be a pop star.
Uh-huh. I know. I've heard the name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's legitimately amazing.
Oh,
I mean, she sings her face off.
Great, great.
And she's kind of, she's sort of whatever. I don't even know if they call it like outlaw country anymore, but mm-hmm. she's kind of that version of like badass country.
Yeah,
like she's
alt country kind of
gorgeous and all tatted up and
yeah.
Awesome. She's like a bad girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did that opportunity come to you?
You know what? She and her manager went to record the song, and one of them, I can't remember if it was her or her manager, Chip, one of them said, oh, this sounds like something that Judy Gemstone would sing. And so her manager literally DM'd me on Instagram, and then a guy who he sort of knows that I know sent me an interim message saying, hey, check your what do you call those DMs that you don't know the people?
I don't know.
It's like
the
your
the
other
DMs
box.
You don't know people. Yeah.
He was like, check that box. My friend is a manager and they want you to direct a video. And I was like, oh.
Okay.
So because the interim thing came, but yeah, they literally just reached out of nowhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it was cool.
Thank you, Judy Gemstone.
That's right.
Well, what do you, what's the point of it all for you? What do you think, you kind of covered it when you said, you know, the be yourself kind of aspect of mm-hmm. it. But I mean, are there other kind of lessons that you've learned from doing this or that you wish someone had told you?
I think as much as you can, well, okay, let me back this up a little. I think there are so many valid life philosophies and life lessons and kind of roadmaps within improv of there's really no wrong ever. Mm-hmm. There's just go and follow the joy, I think. I think that's huge, huger than I've ever realized before. I heard this thing once on NPR years and years ago, where some scientist was saying that he thinks people, that you are basically seeing the innermost, truest part of people when they're laughing. And I was like, it just struck me like a lightning bolt in my slit. And I was like, oh, I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that all this bullshit we put on other things of like, oh, that person's a dick or this, blah, blah, blah. If you can see somebody truly belly laughing, not fake laughing, not trying to like look pretty while they laugh, mm-hmm. not trying to be a cool guy while they laugh, but like someone genuinely, genuinely laughing, I think you get a glimpse of their soul.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing in life.
Yeah.
Not to distill it down to sort of laughter is the most important thing, but I think it is. And then within that is, you know, really truly caring about your friends and your family.
Yeah.
And trying to help them when you can, and trying to help in general when you can.
Yeah.
Because we're all the same. We're all connected. We're all the same. We're all just made up of weird fucking dots. And I do think there's something transcendent in laughing. And if I can help bring that, great.
Well, you know, there's always, you know, historically, philosophically, the notion of making people happy is there's a real strong value attached to that. And it's like, it's the epitome of happiness, mm-hmm. making people laugh.
Totally.
Like it's you, like, I don't know, like aside from drug dealers, mm-hmm. I don't know who else is more like selling someone a direct path to happiness mm-hmm. than what like we get to do totally. For a living. And it can be so amazing and it can be so wonderful. And it's a shame that like that gets forgotten a lot, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is, because it's really profound.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to get in your own way with it.
Yeah.
And then you have to remember like, oh yeah, if I get out of my own way and my whole point, say it's with improv. I mean, you could put this on 1,000 things. If my whole point is to make you look good, I'm going to look great.
Yeah.
I don't need to worry about myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think we're all at our best when we even forget we have a body.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah, let all the beautiful shit come through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I was, you know, when I did one of the groups that I was with in Chicago, there was a wide range of experience on mm-hmm. stage. Like, mm-hmm. there were some people that kind of just, and it was kind of the nature of this group. Mm-hmm. Some of the people kind of just started out, and then other people knew what they were doing and had been doing it a while. And there was a woman who was very enthusiastic and would go out because it was improvised plays.
Uh-huh.
And we would get the suggestion and everyone goes backstage, and this woman would go out every time.
She'd be
the first one out there. And it got to the point where she would go out, or someone would try and beat her. And if they could beat her, then like, okay, good, we're starting.
Right.
But if she got out there quick enough, it got to be where everyone else on the team would just look at me like, go get her, Andy. Go, you know, like, go. And I found that like what I could do, because she just did the negating, you know, like, where you go. God. Like, there's a great 30 Rock bit where Liz Lemon and Jane Krakowski, I can say the characters, where it's like a flashback to their improv, doing corporate improv. And it's like, a character from Sling Blade and Oprah Winfrey, you know, like driving in a car or something. And Liz Lemon goes, I sure do love them French fried potatoes. And Jane Krakowski goes, no, you don't, Oprah. Just like the heaviest denial. Just the you're just so hilarious. And this, you know, you'd be like, you know, like, how can I, you know, sit down and act like you're typing and how can I help you? And she would be like, well, first of all, you should get back to the oven and start baking that bread.
Oh, brutal.
You know, just like, and I found relentless agreement. No matter what she threw at me, I would go, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll type my novel later. I got to get back and make that bread, mm-hmm. you know, and then.
It's the only way.
It's such a bigger thing that I'm not saying that you should be a pushover in mm-hmm. life, but. Relentless agreement to forces that are against you. Like, all right, mm-hmm. you know, you want to push me this way. I'll go that way too, but I'm still going to assert myself. I'm yep. still going to be able to get control of this thing mm-hmm. by agreeing with you, you know, and by
totally,
you know,
I mean, and that's almost a big, spiritual philosophy because yeah. you're almost describing acceptance.
Yes.
And just, yeah, the moment is what the moment is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I hope at some point you kicked her out of the group though. For real.
It wasn't like that kind of thing. It just sort of, you know, you just keep plugging away and hoping that attrition, which I think did eventually.
Yeah.
You know. So, well, Edie, this has been really, really, really fun, and I appreciate it so much.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. It's really fun.
And talking to me. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening, and I will be back with another episode of The Three Questions next week, God willing.
God willing.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco production. It is produced by Sean Doherty and engineered by Rich Garcia. Additional engineering support by Eduardo Perez and Joanna Samuel. Executive produced by Nick Liao, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, with assistance from Maddie Ogden. Research by Alyssa Grawl. Don't forget to rate and review and subscribe to The Three Questions with Andy Richter wherever you get your podcasts. And do you have a favorite question you always like to ask people? Let us know in the review section.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing? Can't you feel it ain't showing? Oh, you must be a-knowing. I've got a big, big love.
This has been a Team Coco production.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.